So you people living here, to really have any kind of an idea of what is happening in Israel, really an impossibility. I was stunned to find out how a number of murders of Jews that took place in Israel this past month simply were not mentioned in the papers here. We reached that point. In other cases, there is a very distinct effort on the part of the JTA and other such things to downplay the issue. Not so terrible. So, for example, I don't know if any of you know of a sudden surge on the part of high school students in Israel who have written to the Minister of Defense saying that they will not serve beyond the green line in the occupied territories, as they call it. It began with 16 of them, and then another 34. Now it's over 200 of them. And what we see is the beginning of a kind of a Vietnamization of Israel. The difference being that the Vietnam problem in America, assuming that the left was wrong in this country, the mistake was 8,000 miles away. The mistake was a mistake. This country was not immediately injured by it. If the left is wrong in Israel, they're wrong across the border. And tragedy will be our lot. And in these 200 youngsters, and by the way, clearly they represent a great many, many more youngsters, it does take a certain amount of courage on their part to openly do this. But as with so many, many other people, there are people that say what other people think. And in this case, the tragedy is that large numbers of basically secular Ashkenazi Sabris do not know whether justice is on our side or perhaps on the Arab side. And there's a very serious problem today. Over 100 soldiers have already been jailed for refusing to serve beyond the green line. The Army tries to keep this, and I think rightly so, to keep this quiet so as not to make things spread. But understand that the Arabs are certainly not our major problem. It's the Jews who are our major problem. And when you have this kind of a sickness spreading among Jews and among soldiers, this could be a very, very serious problem. I just want to go over some of the things. It was a difficult month this past month in Israel. Three soldiers were murdered inside the country. One of the soldiers, a Dutch Christian who converted to Judaism, became a practicing Jew, a religious Jew. His body was found. He then volunteered for the army. His body was found in a kibbutz field. His head had been split open with an axe. The interesting thing is, it took 3 days before we were told that his head had been you know, split open. The original story came over. Signs of violence had been found. And that goes to show you the effort which is made in Israel on the part of the news media to play down the problem. When little Rami Chaba, a boy of 8, was found murdered last year, none of the papers and none of the news media wrote that his face had been so pounded that he had no face left. I spoke to his parents at the shiva, and I spoke to the person that found the body, and he told me, he said, there was no face left. They had pounded his child, 8-year-old child. So clearly the question is, why don't we say this? Why didn't the news media at any time, not television, not radio, not even the private newspapers, mention that Moshe Tamam, the soldier that had been murdered, had been brutally I don't want to go into what they did to his body, but it wasn't mentioned. And clearly the reason is because there is a mad lemming-like drive to convince Jews that they have to coexist with Arabs. This impossible dream of Jewish-Arab coexistence. Someone here gave me, you know, Sunday's Times in Yugoslavia. Tremendous strife between the Serbs and the Albanians. It's not just the Serbs and the Albanians. It's the Serbs and the Croats in Belgium. Belgium, you finished Belgium, nice country. The government just fell over a language issue. French or Flemish. In Corsica, bombs constantly explode. This Corsica wants freedom. Tibet, the Tibetans don't want to live with the Chinese. India is worried about a Sri Lanka problem, as if India doesn't have problems. Sikhs and Hindus, Muslims and Hindus, Buddhists and Hindus. The fact is that there is this incredible refusal to face up to the fact that the Arabs, who differ from us, not unlike in Northern Ireland, where the two opposing sides are exactly the same except in religion. Their language is the same. Their nationality is the same. Their culture is the same. They differ in one thing, and there's a bloody civil war. We and the Arabs differ in every possible way. In nationality, in religion, in language, in culture, in background, but we will live together, of course, sir. It was a big article in all the papers in Israel just last week, a day before I left. Moshe Ahrens and his staff issued a frightening report on what is happening today in the Arab sector inside the state of Israel, in which they state that there is the building inside the state of Israel. Now, he's only speaking about the state of Israel, not Judea and Samaria, the occupied territories. Inside the state of Israel, Moshe Ahrens warns, the Arabs are building an infrastructure of an Arab state which is separate from the infrastructure of Israel. In short, they are building the foundation for a Palestine inside Israel. Now, he writes this. That's wonderful. Finally, thank God, someone is writing this. What is the solution? He says, in order to avert this, we must give them equal rights. Now, Moshe Ahrens, if anyone who knows Moshe Ahrens, is a bright, intelligent, and articulate person. What possesses him to suddenly become insane? And there is no other word for it. The man is insane. Insanity. What possesses the UJA? Now there are two distinctly specific UJA programs to allocate funds directly to Arabs. The Federation UJA in this city has now decided to allocate directly $15 million for the Arabs of Lida. And the Federation in Los Angeles is giving $21 million to the Arabs of Jaffa. Now, we must be crazy. If anyone knows those two neighborhoods, Ajami in Jaffa and the Rakevet in Lida, these are the hotbeds of Jew hatred, such as you cannot imagine. The Arabs of Israel are far more intensely haters of Israel than the Arabs of Judea and Samaria. And they're much more dangerous because they're Israelis. They're not afraid. They are sabras. They have tremendous chutzpah. They speak Hebrew. They're citizens. You can't touch me. I'm a citizen. And they're right. And for this, we are giving a total of $36 million next year. Yeah. I'm not even talking about, this is separate from scholarships that are given to Arabs by American friends of, you know, Hebrew U, and Haifa University, and Tel Aviv University, and there are 250 Arab students today in Bar Ilan, for the Orthodox pious types here. 4,200 Arabs today study with full scholarships in the universities of Israel. That's what you give. It is very, very important that we understand exactly what is happening. I mean, one has to see this. One has to see on Sukkot, when usually the old city is jammed with Jews, to walk from Shaar Shechem, Damascus Gates, to the Western Wall and see a total of 6 Jews because they're afraid. On Sukkot, a couple, a young couple married 4 months, was walking. An Arab walked up to the man, fellow student of 24, asked him the time. He started to look at his watch, and the Arab shot him, and then killed him. Now, the Arab, there must have been 1,000 Arabs around there. It was in your city. Nobody saw anything. Nobody saw a thing. No one saw a thing. No one saw a thing. Of course no one saw a thing. So what do we expect? The greater pity is that when they will catch this Arab, and they'll eventually catch him, he will receive a life sentence for a cold-blooded murder, a premeditated murder. And he'll be free in a prisoner exchange after 2 years, 3 years. Now, I want you to realize the extent of the insanity. People are always saying, why doesn't Israel pass a death penalty on terrorism? Because Israel has a law. It's not true that Israel doesn't have a law which allows the courts to give a death penalty. That's not true. Israel has a law and has had a law for 30 years allowing the death penalty for terrorists. But there is a specific policy which has been both by Likud and Labor, in which the military prosecutor is forbidden to ask for the death penalty. Now I'll tell you the insanity within this insanity. The military prosecutor for Judean Samaria for the last 8 years, and just now resigned. A young fellow, a religious fellow, last year asked for the death penalty. He disobeyed orders. He asked for the death penalty in a case of four Arabs that had murdered Moshe Tamam and mutilated him himself. He received a prison sentence of 14 days for violating the order because he had asked for the death penalty. Now, if someone wanted to write a modern book of Chelm, he would include such insane stories, except that this would not be a book of Jewish humor. It would be laughter through terrible tears. These are things that are happening daily. Today, there is a terrible fear, a fear today in Israel. Jews are afraid to go in certain areas. You will not see a Jew in old Akko after dark. You will not see Jews there. They are afraid to go. You will see thousands of Arabs in New Akko, which they're not afraid to go anyway. I don't have to tell you what this does to the morale of the Jew inside Israel. I don't have to tell you what it means for a young Israeli soldier . Let me give you an example of a young soldier. One of the soldiers that was murdered recently, Alex Arad, was a kibbutznik. A long time leftist, but an extreme leftist. From Hashomer Hatzair, he was born in Cuba. His parents had come from Poland to Cuba, and he was born there. He was a leftist. One of the leading lights in the Peace Now movement. Hated Kahanism, fought that coexistence, Peace Now, and so on. He was murdered as he stood near the Megiddo crossroads. He was standing right next to the Kele Megiddo, the Megiddo prison. If you ever travel Afula, on the road to Afula, there is right on your right side a big, big prison. There were people on the watchtower. There were guards in broad daylight. This was an Arab walked over to him, took a knife, and killed him. Wasn't afraid. A Jew is a Jew.
In one breath you say they're our biggest problem.
I said they're our biggest problem, but it's a Jewish problem. Know that it's a Jewish problem. It's a Jew. He's a poor thing, but our own. Listen, I mean, I'll certainly try to, deal with that. What? There's always hope. There's always hope for those people like that. Because at the funeral, the secretary of the kibbutz got up and said that, he said, I am stunned. We who fought for COVID existence are struck seven times. We are, dumbfounded seven times over. Who knows? You can never tell. The head of the Kach party in Upper Nazareth is an old-time Labor Party. Palmach, Haganah, old-time Labor Party man. Today, he makes me look moderate. Why? Because he lives in Upper Nazareth, a city which was founded as a Jewish city by the socialists, and today it's 26% Arab. Two Jews were just stabbed there by Arabs in a fight. Jewish girls are raped there. So suddenly he's a big kach man, and a very gutsy guy. gets arrested, he isn't here. And a man in his early 60s. Big, strong, tough farmer. Now, of course there's hope. The tragedy is that most Jews learn through what? Through tragedy. You know, this is, I mean, Jews, rather than having brains and learning from other people's tragedies, they have to suffer constantly. In any case, on the day that you will begin to understand that psyche, then you'll also be in need of help. Of course, it's not an understandable thing, because it isn't normal. It isn't normal. Who says that Jews are normal people? We are a product of 2,000 years of abnormality. No, because I was not what we and a phone first to make sure, and they said no, you're not welcome. Not anybody. I sent a telegram. But in any case, what I started to say, when the Arab killed him, he took his gun, M16, and ran off. And he was chased by two soldiers. And he turned on them, and he pulled the trigger, and the gun jammed. Now, a normal soldier sees somebody shoot him dead, right? They didn't shoot. They grabbed him and so on. They didn't shoot. A commission was immediately, why didn't you shoot? And one of the soldiers said, because if I would have shot and killed him, I would have been, first of all, suspended, investigated, maybe put on trial. I figured, what am I, crazy? Why should I shoot? We've reached that point. That is the most dangerous of all points today. That soldiers are afraid to defend themselves lest they go to jail. There was a trial taking place this month of four soldiers from Shechem who shot an Arab as they were bombarded by a hail of rocks. And they shot the Arab. They are being put on trial because this Arab, according to the prosecution, was not one who actually threw the rocks. He was just among the Arabs, but he didn't throw the rocks. Now, this is normal. This is not normal. Of course, this is normal. I mention these things to you because that's the bad news. The good news is that probably because of this, we are on a roll. We have never been as strong in Israel as we are today at this very moment. For the first time, there has been a breakthrough with the Ashkenazi Jews, and a big one. And we see the calls that come in, and the letters that come in, and from where they come, and so on. The head of the young guard of the Labor Party in Netanya called us up, invited me over to his home for a house party. All of the Labor Party people there, and he is now the Tach chairman in Netanya. This is Labor. This fellow is not a religious. He's this much from being an anti-Semite. But he left the chairmanship of the young guard of the Labor Party, and he's not a poor fellow. He had a home, a fellow Eden is up. Because everyone knows that the Labor Party is made up of the working class. In any case, what they did was, what is happening is, you don't have to be Labor, right or left, to understand that it is impossible to continue in this way. With every single week another Jew killed, and every day Jews beaten. You don't have to be a right winger, a left winger, a religious Jew, any religious Jew. You have to be normal. That's all. There are a lot of normal people around, more than we know. Now, the projection which is rampant in Israel of our getting between 10 and 12 seats is a very real one. We may get more because we don't know how many people in Israel are afraid to openly say the name Kahana. They're afraid. Israel was built upon fear. Fear of losing a job, fear of not getting credit, fear of being ostracized. Kahana. Might become Kahana. But these are people who may be afraid in the public, but in the polling booth, no one sees and no one knows. And that's where we could expect an earthquake, a political one, to strike Israel. Now, to give you just an example, week before I came here, I presented a motion of no confidence on the government, against the government, on the security issue. We had presented a bill in Knesset 2 weeks ago making it mandatory for the death penalty to be given to terrorists. In other words, there is a law, and we wanted to make it mandatory. No option on the part of the judges. They must give the death penalty. The government refused to support this bill. So we presented a motion, no confidence. The one who rose to propose that the motion of no confidence be defeated was Michael Dekel. The same Dekel who a few months ago suddenly stunned everybody by talking like you know who and speaking about the transfer of Arabs from the country. Now he isn't some extremist. He is the vice minister of defense. He's a vice cabinet minister. And he made it. So, of course, he then said, well, it means a voluntary transfer. I don't think voluntary. What's the difference? But he made that statement. And people were stunned. And editorials and article writers, Dekel is Kahana. Dekel is not Kahana. But when Dekel rose to move that my motion be defeated, it was defeated. Afterwards, the parliamentary secretary for Shas asked Dekel why he agreed to strike this motion down. He said, you, Dekel, why didn't you at the very least explain, you know, help out Khan? So Dekel told him, and he later told me what Dekel said to him. He said, are you crazy? Kahana has at least 8 seats now. And I'm going to help him yet. Now, this was Dekel speaking privately to someone from the Shas party. And he said 8. Now, he's wrong. We don't have 8. We have more than 8. But he already believes that we have at least 8.
How will that help?
How will what help me? It didn't help me. I'm just telling you what actually happened and what their great fear is. If they supported a Mayor Kahana bill for the death penalty and that bill passed in Knesset and it was Mayor Kahana's bill, I'd get another 10 seats. He's not going to help me. I understand. So one more case of someone who is placing the good of his party over that of the country.
All countries, self-interest.
True. Not the whole country. Not the whole country.
What is it? What
do you do? I don't know what you mean. You'll be amazed how many people are Tach people inside. And you'll see them eventually expressed.
I'm talking about the masses. I'm talking about the people.
Forget about them. They are leaving. They are leaving now. The real problem arises precisely because of our growth. We have grown enormously in Israel. We have a national organization. For people that we call JDL here, it's hard for them to imagine Tach being an organized movement. It is an organized movement. It is a national movement. With offices in various cities, with activities that function well and properly and organized. That's what creates our problem for us. We have, like people in the stock market, We've overextended ourselves. And we are not liquid today. It's not that we are getting less money than we have in the last couple of years. We are getting the same amount of money. But our expenses have grown enormously. If when I go out every single night and speak two rallies a night, I cannot tell you what that means. We combat the boycott on Kach in radio and TV. Now, there was a court ruling, high court, the highest court. They don't care. There is no law in Israel. They make fun of the law. They have contempt for the law. The high court ruling said that I had to be given this. To this day, I haven't appeared once on a television show, on a radio show, interviewed once even. No. They've simply ignored the high court. Nevertheless, our rallies every night, I'm not talking about one night or five nights a week or an entire month, but we've gone now for close to 3.5 years, 5 nights a week, 2 rallies a night. There isn't a hole in Israel in which we haven't spoken. Places that haven't seen a Knesset member in 40 years. And we've been there. Begin never visited, never spoke in a neighborhood. Begin would come to the city square and speak. We also speak in every city square. But aside from that, we go into every single neighborhood. You know what that means to them? Ah, it's a tremendous thing. You should. We find in an empty lot, we find some shopping center. We speak there. And when you speak in a neighborhood, the whole neighborhood comes out. The whole neighborhood comes out. Men, women, and children, and that's the key, the children. If we're talking about 10, 12 seats this election, what terrifies the opposition is what's going to be in the next election when all these kids that are 11, 12, 13, 14, who don't know anything except Kahana, 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 that's all they know. Just like their parents once knew, Begin, 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 that's all they knew. And they became permanent Begin people. That's what we have here. We are talking between 35 and 40 seats the election in Athens. Easily, we have the youth. There was a poll in the Army magazine, Machanit, giving us close to 30% of the Army vote in this coming election. You know what that means? So I want you to know the bad news and the good news. And I want you to have a sense of urgency. That to me has to be inscribed on every person's forehead, a sense of urgency. The Jewish people, the state of Israel faces tragedy or glorious victory. We are at a crossroads now. We are the hope of the Jewish people. And know that. And this isn't arrogance. This is clear, cold truth. We are the hope of the Jewish people and the only hope. And people know it. And that's why we're the only party that has this enormous spread. At our rallies, you'll see black hat types and pushtakim without shirts. You have people that voted. We have people that never voted in Israel. What they call the ultras. They never voted in Israel because they don't recognize the UN government. This year, those people are voting for Kach. Because as one of them told me, one of the zebra stripes, he said, all the rest are bluffers, all the rest of this. The only honest people. And one said to me in Yiddish, you showed me that that is possible to be. And I'm a Zionist. Tell me that. It was when we spoke, for example, in Bnei Brak 2 months ago, right in the center of Bnei Brak, opposite Rav Shach's house.
tremendous, an enormous turnout. And they cheered. And in the end, we finished our rally the way we finished every rally, with the singing of Hatikva. And I didn't say, well, I mean, the name Brock, if I sing Hatikva, it's going to hurt me. Maybe it did hurt me, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. A Zionist, and a real Zionist. Herzl wasn't a real Zionist. We're the real Zionists. Why should we let them take away Zionism from us? We built a yeshiva. We've opened a yeshiva, and you should see this yeshiva now. You should see the yeshiva we have here. One of the mothers of the mother of one of the students there, and I want to tell you that is a yeshiva that is going to put out students the way Jewish students were meant to be when God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. Students who are going to be scholar warriors. That's what David was. He was a scholar. He would get up at midnight every night and sit and learn Torah, and then in the morning he would get up and kill Goliath. That is a scholar warrior. That's what a Jewish scholar was meant to be. That's what a Gadol b'Yisrael, everybody said, but who are the Gadolim? Who are the great rabbis? The great rabbis were, in the Bible, those rabbis who sent day and night to learn, and then when they had to go out and fight for the people, they went out and they fought for the people. That's the kind of a student that we want to put out from our yeshiva. And one who isn't a victim of a schizophrenia of Judaism and Western Hellenism. And we are going to insist upon truth, Jewish truth, Jewish truth, without the complexes. But if we say this, it's not going to sound nice. But it sounds nice. What do you think is going to sound nice? Problem is that we have complexes. We have complexes. It doesn't sound nice. It doesn't sound nice to you because you have a problem. Jewish youngsters are no Jewish truth, no matter how grating and how painful it is for the outside world. You don't care. You don't care. So we've had a very good year. And this year, there must be an election. By law. By law. At this point, I can safely say there will be an election this year, Chris. There must be an election. Well, now it's October of 87. By October of 88, by the end of October of 88, there must be an election. There must be an election. Now, there must be an election. There's always a possibility of having it earlier, but within a year, it must be finished. That's it. Final. So all the people that have been saying, well, when is it going to be? I also said that. I also, when, and then I realized that I was wrong. With every passing month, we gain support. Had the election been held when I wanted it 2 years ago, we would have gotten three, four seats. Now, who knows? Who knows today how much? Who knows today how much? When a woman doctor was murdered on Sukkot, on Dizengoff Street, murdered in her sickle, raped and murdered by an Arab. Suddenly we start, what? On Dizengoff, yes. Yeah. On Dizengoff, Why should Dizengoff Street be different than any other street, after all? It's called democracy. Now, so suddenly we receive calls from people in that neighborhood asking for a house party. Now these are people, these people have the mark, you know, there's the mark of Cain, or they have the mark of labor. You know, all time is people in the 60s, 70s who always voted labor, always voted labor. Suddenly because there was a killing, suddenly Kahan. So, who knows how many seats remain? Nobody knows. It could be a flood. A flood.
At the various meetings that you've had,
yes,
have you gotten any indication of how many of the people that attend how they feel about the resettlement in America. Most of the people, not the leaders, do you have any indication of how they
certainly feel? When I get up, and in my speech, I go up and I go up the problem, and I say, now there's only one solution. There's only one answer, and all the rest is all nonsense. And that answer is Arabs out, and the whole crowd erupts in cheers. I have some indication. Some indication. Of course that's going. The problem is, and when I say to them, I say what you are all thinking, and you see he was saying, right. Of course this is true. The pity is that people said they're thinking about it. Don't think about it. Say it. Do it. No. Obviously, that is money. On each seat, I purposely gave, we made up a budget. And you'll have the budget there somewhere, even though I don't. Or maybe I have it. This budget, the top page is our monthly budget. We have ballooned from $14,000 a month to $31,000 a month, not counting the yeshiva. And we have been forced to cut this back to $27,000 a month, and that will involve the closing of two of our offices. We have no choice. We don't have this kind of money today. On the last three pages, you have a breakdown of our campaign, a 2 months election campaign, It's $316,000 for 2 months. That is no money. That is no money. Labor will spend $15 million this year on their campaign. $316,000 is a joke. What we have going for us, which is worth millions, is one thing. Recognition that no other person has in Israel. I can walk in the street, everyone knows me. And above all, everyone knows what Tach stands for. We don't have to put a dime into ads explaining what our position is. We are, everybody knows. So that will save us a lot of money. But I want you to know that Asa Weitzman in the last election spent $6 million. We spent $90,000 in the last election and won a seat. Can you imagine that? And what you answered, we won two seats. We won two seats in the last election, and they stole the second one from us. We lost the second one by 4,000 votes only. And that's because we only had 400 poll watchers out of 8,000. And they steal you blind there. Israel is the only country in the world, the only modern country in the world that uses paper ballots for a national election. Absurd. They don't have money for it. You can cheat easily. And you must have poll watchers there. And I've said it over and over and over again. Why? Because not only must you have the poll watcher in the evening when they stop the voting and they start the counting. You must have that, because if we don't have someone there, they will do what we know they did in certain polling places. They took the amount of votes that we had gotten, threw those ballots out, and divided it up among the poll watchers from other parties that were there. This election, we must have money for poll watchers. I don't say we need 8,000 poll watchers. We certainly are. We don't need them in the Arab villages or in the kibbutzim. Our method of getting our votes is going to be a flyer given out in Arabic to every Arab village, stating that the Arab village which gives us the most votes will get a preferential treatment in visas to America. And if you think that that is not going to get us a lot of votes, you don't know the Arabs. Now, but we do need at least 3,000-4,000 poll watchers. And that's a lot of money, because we have to pay them. they have to take off work. We have to pay them. And it's not just one watcher. We need two, because the polls open at 7, close at 10. He's not going to be there an entire day. And he has to be fed. He has to be fed. And he has to be there. Someone must be there the whole day, not just for the counting, because during the day, what happens is, and we found that in several cases in the last election, someone walks into the polling booth, picks up all of our paper ballots, puts it in his pocket, and walks out. Now someone walks in, wants to vote Kach. There's no ballots. Now he's not going to go. He's not going to walk out and say, where are the Kach ballots? So they'll go there. I'll vote Likud. So we have to have a poll watcher who will every half hour stop the voting and walk in and check to see if the Kach ballots are there, and if they are not, he has extra ones in his pocket. That's what the reality of Boss Bailey's bailiwick in Israel is. We make Mayor Bailey look like an amateur. You have to have cars. You cannot get a taxi in Israel on election day. They're all rented, they're all hired by the major parties. What do they do with it? They pick up old people early in the morning and they take them by taxi. And they say, here, take this ballot, just put it in. That's so we have to be there earlier. And we have to have our cars. And that means renting. We are fighting a real battle here. It took me years until I finally learned what politics is in Israel. And now we know it. We learned it the hard way. We lost 3 times. And then won. And now we know it. We have to open up storefronts a month before the election, in at least, and on the last page here, we have listed the cities in categories, the major ones which we have already. In number two, there were some which we have already, but most not. We have none in three, and none in four. And this is a minimal budget. This is a minimal budget here. I'm talking about saving the state of Israel. This state is going to go under, God forbid, if we don't win. We are in the hands of incompetents, tiny little dwarfs, people with no vision. And we have to save Jews from themselves, not from the Arabs, from themselves. And this has to be done. And that's why I hope that everybody here will be at the dinner. I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And I hope that at that dinner, you'll make a pledge. And I mean, this time, make it hurt. Make it hurt. I don't know how many people here lost money in the stock market. If you did, think of one thing. If you had given me that money, you wouldn't have lost it. You wouldn't have lost it. And maybe the Kodesh Baruch was trying to tell us something. What? We held on to the money. We held on. How much tzedakah we could give. And everybody in this room, I know, gives. Really, really gives. But how much more we could give. How could we give? And how much we waste on Narishkeit. And then one day the Kodesh Baruch comes and poof, and he blows away 10,000 and 20,000. Sure, it was only paper profits, but it was money which was being squirreled away for, I don't know, for what? So the stock market is the biggest Musa safer in the entire world. It was a bigger Musa lesson than all of the sermons and all the drushes of all the Russian and all the Gedolim, Russian Yeshiva, is possible, suddenly a lesson. If I would have given that money for a Jewish cause, I wouldn't have lost it. It would have been in the bank. There's a bank upstairs. every dollar you appear to give away here is really banked away there. Big, big stocks. Those are the futures. There are no futures in this world. Futures. Futures are upstairs. Those are the futures. So give and make sure that, remember, this next election decides the fate of Israel. This next election decides the fate of Israel. If you would travel with me, not as a tourist, in the Galilee, I'll take you and you'll see the horror of an area inside Israel which has 53% Arabs already. The Galilee, not the territories, not this. The Galilee. Take you through areas in which you won't see a Jew. Not a Jew. Village after village, Arabs. And you'll see Palestine. You see Palestine already. That's the infrastructure of Palestine. In the Galilee, in the Little Triangle, in Jaffa, in Akko, in Ramleh, in Lod, in Jerusalem, which has 140,000 Arabs. 140,000 Arabs in Jerusalem. So, I hope you'll take these things home with you. And look at them carefully, and study them carefully. And I'll take questions soon. But I hope that this coming Sunday, brother, I hope that everybody comes. If you're not planning to, give us the check now. The reason why I'm not asking for that now is because I'm counting on you to let this thing sink in tonight so that you'll give a lot more on Sunday. Not for me. I'm not a schnorr. I don't need this. I don't need this nonsense. Last week we had a rally in a real leftist neighborhood, and we purposely went there to let them see that there are no areas in which we can't appear. And dodging the rocks and the stones is incredible. It's a dangerous act. I don't need that. But we have to do that to save the Jewish people. And I need help. It was in Cholom, in one of the rich areas in Cholom. Totally, almost the total area of Ashkenazi Jews. Almost, totally so. And they brought in kids from Noha, Oved, and Hashemar Seir, and so on. It's a bad, bad area for us. But we went there, and I spoke an hour. I usually speak less, but then doctor an hour. Eggs, stones, you can't.
What happened to a man like Shamir? You don't hear anything about him anymore. He was a right winger.
I don't know what a right winger means, a right winger, a left winger. I must tell you something, that under Ben Gurion, the Arabs had less rights than under Menachem Begin. And the Ben-Gurion Arabs could not leave their villages after 5 p.m. in Israel. An Arab who wanted to leave his village after 5 p.m. had to get a special permit from the military governor. Begin, who wanted to show his, I'm not a fascist, I'm not a right-winger, I'm not a this, and I'll show you how good I really am and how liberal I am. This was the tragedy. This desire, this tremendous need to be loved. When a Jew has a need to be loved, that's the end of it. The end of us. The end of us, finished. So it isn't right winger, left winger. The tragedy with Shamir is, again, power. You want power. So you change. So you change. That's the tragedy. You want to stay in power. So you change. You think that there's one thing that I say that he doesn't grasp. He understands all. He's a clever man. He's a sharp fellow. He understands everything. I don't say anything that he doesn't understand and agree with. He wants power.
But if a man don't talk to the state from the beginning, doesn't he see the danger? He don't care?
Ask him. And he'll tell you it's not so terrible. He has this constant refrain.
לא כמו שאתם אומרים, נשב בשקט, הוא עושה זה, וגם זה יעבור, וזה לא סופר, and so on. It's an incredible kind of thing. And in the meantime, the great dangers that are happening inside Israel are not the dangers of a bomb going off or a gun going off. The dangers are the growth of the Arabs within the state. This consul general, this Arab in Atlanta, is a symbol of the sickness. It was tremendous, but it was a press conference by the Federation condemning me, and all the rabbis from what about that, they all came and attacked me. The Atlanta Constitution, which is a great liberal paper, would not take a paid ad by us because it's a liberal paper, of course. I'm going back November 12th. We're having a debate between me and the Arab. Now, I called the debate. He's going to show up. Obviously, he won't show up. But we'll have a debate with a chair, with the Arab's name on it. And we're going to debate. We're going to debate the issues. We're not letting this thing go, because in this thing is the insanity of Israel. This is the representative of the Jewish state, the Zionist state. The consul general's major role is Aliyah. You can imagine how hard he is going to work on Aliyah. He is as rich as, and he is a wealthy Arab, a wealthy person. Head of one of the big clans in the area there, the Arab clans. He doesn't need money. But the insanity of a person who is an anti-Zionist, who is not a Jew, who opposed the concept of a Jewish state, and he represents the Jewish people and the Jewish state. Peres appointed him. He was a Weizmann man, this Arab. He was number 6 on Weizmann's list to the Knesset. He didn't make it, so Weizmann owed him one. So he told Peres, "I have a great idea to show how democratic Israel is. We'll put this Arab." So Peres said, "Great." He said, I have an Arab. I owe him. You owe me." And that's how the thing happened. Now, obviously, there's tokenism here. What do you mean a consul general in Atlanta? Make him at least an ambassador. If you want democracy, let's really, really show that it's democracy, at least an ambassador. You're laughing about within a year, you'll see at least one cabinet minister will be an Arab. Arabs have already demanded, Arabs within the Labour Party have demanded the proportion of cabinet ministers based upon the proportion of Arabs. And they're right, if you're not a Zionist. They're wrong if you're a Zionist. That's what Israel has got to decide. It has to decide who it is, what it is. There's a tremendous talk today in Israel about a constitution. They want a constitution. And there are numerous articles in Haaretz that if there is a constitution, we will have to change the whole concept of a Jewish state. Now that is rational. That is logical. But why should any Jew want to back a country which isn't a Jewish state? I don't know. If they're smart, then they will. But it's not so much the running for against the mayor. It's just the putting up the list for the city council. If the Arabs of East Jerusalem would all vote, the Arab party would be the second largest party in the council. It would be the balance of power, certainly so. Well, that is no question. Of that, there is no question. In any event, do me a favor, show up Sunday and give money and give more than you think that you can afford. This is for the election. This is for the election. I have to raise $600,000 between the election and the general expenses of our monthly running of the Kach movement. $600,000. How am I going to raise $600,000? To me, it's an incredible sum, but it's really nothing. It is no money. It's no money. If 600 Jews would give $1,000, what is that? What is that? $1,000, there are Jews that go to the Homolak for a weekend. Boom, $1,000 gone. For what? For what? A person will go to a restaurant, take a fancy restaurant, his family. $100 gone. Like that. And here I'm talking Jewish survival. And here I'm talking about the UJ giving $21 million to the Arabs of Jaffa. $21 million. I want one of the tragedies of the yeshiva world is the failure to teach Tanakh in depth. Tanakh Bible is the foundation of Judaism. If you want to know the basic concepts of Judaism, it comes from the Tanakh, because that's where Jews live normally as a nation. And from that sprang forth Jewish leaders who were normal and untouched by un-Jewish concepts and cultures. The average student in the yeshiva, in Hesder, doesn't know Tanakh. He doesn't know Mira. He doesn't know anything about it. The Hesder schools are, unfortunately, most are bastions of concepts of live and let live and coexistence.